Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 10 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's July 15th. This is program 197 in the series. And to my right, the very vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Good to see you.
Thank you. You
it's been
too.
A week.
I know. That's good.
We're back.
we had a little break and we're back.
Yeah, we're going to play some classic radio shows for you. But first, I want to say hi to Shantae Garth, our producer. She's in the booth.
And we're glad you're back,
That's right. Glad to have her back. And tonight, are you ready for this, Lisa?
I sure am.
Good detective adventure with Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons. Then it's Fibber McGee and Molly. And then suspense. You won't want to miss it. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Neil Armstrong in the upcoming film First Man, about the legendary space mission that led him to become the first man to walk on the moon.
Okay.
And the winner
gets
two tickets to Peter and the Starcatcher playing at Metropolis Performing Arts Center through August 20th.
All right. Two tickets?
Two tickets.
312-981-7200 is the number to call. And here's a hint. This actor is the star of La La Land.
City of stars, are you shining just for me?
All right.
I'm guessing you did not see this movie, Carl.
I did not.
I didn't think so.
You are absolutely right.
I mean, it's a musical.
Ding, 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 ding. All right, give us a call. Do you know who that actor is? 312-981-7200. Win some tickets. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to show 197 of the WGN Radio Theater, playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that again.
City of stars, are you shining just for me?
See, Carl, doesn't that make you want to dance a little?
No.
No. Okay, let's talk to Paul. Hey, Paul.
Oh, wait a second. Hang on a second. There we go. There's Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Hey there.
How you doing?
I am doing good.
Great. Who is that actor?
That would be Ryan Gosling.
You are absolutely right. And, Paul, you are a winner. We are thrilled to give you two tickets to Peter and the Starcatcher. It's playing at Metropolis Performing Arts Center through August 20th. You can discover the origin story of Peter Pan and the Neverland you never knew. Get tickets today at metropolisarts.com. I haven't seen the show. I heard it's great, so I hope that you enjoy it.
I'm sure I will.
Fantastic. Take care, and thanks again for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. All right. He's a big winner. Two tickets to Metropolis. They have a great, great theater over there.
It is. It's beautiful.
Really
and
do.
It's in the heart of Arlington Heights.
Yeah. I took my daughter to see. They had sort of I can't remember the name of it. It was like a radio thing that they did, like a radio reenactment.
I've seen many shows there.
They do really high quality productions
there
at Metropolis. So do check it out. Okay. You know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
I want to first give out our number for our text line. So it's 312-981-7200. Please text us. We're here all night long. We love getting your texts. If you want to ask us questions about the show, or if you want to hear some classic radio shows here, name your favorites, we'll be happy to do it.
Or if you just want to talk, we love to talk.
Yeah, we like to chit-chat with you. All right, it's time for Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons. You know, this was on the air a long time. Good Detective Adventure from 1937 all the way to 1955. That's a long time.
Sure is.
And it was produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Bennett Kilpack, Arthur Hughes, and Philip Clark all played Mr. Keene. He was an elderly and kind detective, and he had a faithful assistant who was kind of a little bit not so smart.
Okay.
His name was Mike Clancy, played by Jim Kelly. Now, the series first started out, he was a detective who searched for missing persons, hence the title, Mr. Keen Tracer of Lost Persons. But eventually, the series morphed into a full-on detective series where he solved every kind of crime, including murders. It was sponsored by Anison, Dentine, and RCA Victor over the years. I think you'll really like this. Let's go back to April 23rd, 1952. This is called the Mother's Plea Murder Case. It stars Philip Clark. Here's part one of Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons.
Presenting Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons in The Mother's Plea Murder Case, a new weekly feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of mystery, comedy, music, and drama. Ladies and gentlemen, once again we present Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons, one of the most famous characters of American fiction, in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight, the famous old investigator takes from his files and brings to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Tonight's case is entitled The Mother's Plea Murder. Mr. Keen is presented by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, and Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. And by Anison, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. Now, Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons in The Mother's Plea Murder Case. Our scene opens as a middle-aged woman, obviously under great tension and deeply troubled, enters the elevator of an apartment house in New York and asks the question whose answer plunges her into a frightful sequence of horror and murder.
I want to go to Miss Shirley Spears' apartment.
Oh, it's the third floor, ma'am. It's a funny thing. When you came in, I thought I knew you. Maybe you visit in the building often.
I've never been here before.
That's Miss Spears' apartment right there.
Thank you.
Yes?
Are you Miss Shirley Spears?
Yes, but...
I'm Mrs. Gilbert Gray.
Mrs. Gilbert Gray. Come in. Well, what do you want with me?
Miss Spears, I threw away pride, self-respect, all the things I value to come here and plead with you for the sake of my children and my home.
Okay, you did. So what?
This morning my husband Gilbert asked me for a divorce so he could marry you.
I told him that was the only way he could get me. I've got some pride of my own.
You're young and attractive. I can't believe you're in love with my husband.
Maybe we both love him for the same reason, Mrs. Gray.
What?
To slice it cold, I mean dollars.
I love him because he's my husband. Because he's the father of my children who adore him.
Oh, don't make me cry. It ruins my makeup.
If it's money you want, I'll give you everything I have.
How much is that?
$20,000.
$20,000 against his cool million? Don't make me laugh.
You're cheap and vulgar and horrible. She's dead. I gotta get out of here without being seen. But how? How? I've come to you in desperation, Mr. Keen. You're the only person I could think of to help me. My name is Mrs. Gilbert Gray.
Sit down, Mrs. Gray. This is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Pleased to meet you.
Mr. Keene, I came about the murder of a girl named Shirley Spears.
Shirley Spears?
Mr. Keene, sir, I just finished reading about that murder in the paper.
You did, Mike?
Well, the police are scouring the town for a woman the elevator lad at the apartment gave them a description of. He says he took her up, but she never came down again.
I'm that woman, Mr. Clancy.
Saints preserve us.
Mrs. Gray, were you in the murdered girl's apartment when she was killed?
Yes. I escaped through the back service stairs. Mr. Keene, you've got to help me.
Miss Gray, I must ask you the direct question. Did you murder the girl, Shirley Spears?
I'm a religious woman, Mr. Keene. I'll put my hand on the Bible and swear that I didn't. She deserved being killed if a creature ever did, but...
To help you, I must know all the details. What was the purpose of your visit to Shirley Spears?
Oh, Mr. Keene, don't ask me to tell you that.
Well, then I can't take the case, Mrs. Gray.
A tigress fights for her cubs, Mr. Keene. A mother fights for her children.
Yes?
I was pleading with her and begging her. I offered her every penny I have to let my husband alone.
I see.
She laughed at me. And just then a shot rang out. And she fell dead before me. I knew then that I had to get out of that woman's place or be caught there and accused of murdering her.
Boss.
Now let Mrs. Gray go on, Mike. The evidence she presents against herself is so black, it seems only an innocent person telling the truth would present it.
Then you will help me, Mr. Keene.
Yes, provided you promise to do exactly what I tell you. You must surrender yourself to the police immediately, Mrs. Gray.
To the police?
And be as frank with them as you've been with me. You made a grave mistake leaving the murder scene.
But, Mr. Keene...
It's good advice Mr. Keene has given. Now, if your case goes before a judge and jury, evidence of attempting to escape will, go bad with you.
Before a judge and jury?
Mrs. Gray, has your husband sufficient means to furnish bail if the police arrest you?
The last words she said were $20,000 against his cool million.
Is your husband Gilbert Gray the wealthy lumberman?
Yes, Mr. Keene. And a finer husband and father never lived until he met that girl.
Mrs. Gray, you mentioned the murdered girl's last words. Tell me, what led up to them?
I told her I couldn't believe a young girl like her could love Gilbert. And that I loved him as my husband and the father of my children.
Yes?
And she said something about maybe we both loved him for the same reason. His dollars. It was horrible.
Here's the address of the police station, Mrs. Gray. The sooner you arrive there, the better.
I'm in your hands, Mr. Keene.
Mike Clancy and I will call on your husband and arrange for your bail. You are Mr. Gilbert Gray?
Yes.
My name is Keene, and this is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy, come in. Well, Mr. Keene, I just received a phone call from my wife. That thanks to you, the police are holding her for murder. I demand an explanation.
Your wife came to me for help, Mr. Gray.
So you threw her into jail. Strange way to help her, I must say. Besides, she doesn't need your help.
Well, maybe it's you yourself that needs help.
And why so, Mr. Clancy? My wife, in a jealous rage, killed a young woman who was employed in my office.
Mr. Gray, you seem as firmly convinced that your wife is guilty of murder... As I'm convinced, she's not.
Mr. Keene, I realize the position she's in. And I will get her out myself. I know exactly how to do it, and very quickly.
How, Mr. Gray? By confessing you are the murderer?
What's that?
As I understand the situation, you asked your wife for a divorce so you could marry the murdered Shirley Spears.
Did my wife tell you that?
Yes. And she also informed me that the fatal shot was fired almost the instant the murdered girl made the statement that the only reason she was attempting to break up your home and marry you was, as she put it, for your dollars.
What?
If you were concealed in the apartment and overheard that statement...
I wasn't in Shirley Spears' apartment when my wife was there, Mr. Keene, so I didn't overhear anything, and I didn't kill her.
The police will undoubtedly bring up that possibility, Mr. Gray. I've drawn no conclusions myself.
Mr. Keene, I'm sure you rate me among the lowest of the low. And I am. My wife is the most wonderful woman in the world. And few men have children like ours. I must have been out of my mind to involve myself with a girl like Shirley.
Remorse often comes too late, long after the harm is done.
Mr. Keene, I want you to investigate this case for my wife and myself jointly.
I work with the police, Mr. Gray. And my investigation is solely in the interest of your wife.
But, Mr. Keene...
I will do everything in my power to prove her innocence. But to accomplish that, I'll have to prove someone else guilty.
Hello? Yes, he's here. It's for you, Mr. Keene, a Lieutenant Hale of the police.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gray. Hello, Lieutenant Hale. You have? That's very interesting. We'll be there at once. Goodbye.
Mr. Keene, have the police found anything else against my wife?
I fear so. The elevator boy at the murder building has positively identified Mrs. Gray. I suggest you accompany Mike Clancy and me to the police station. Our car is outside. How do you do, Lieutenant Hale?
Glad to see you, Mr. Keene. Thanks for turning in Mrs. Gray to us, the Spear Girl's killer. Hello, Mike.
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Hale, this is Mrs. Gray's husband, Mr. Gilbert Gray.
Your wife spoke something about bail, Mr. Gray.
I have my checkbook with me.
We're holding her without bail. We've got an open and shut case.
I'll call my attorneys.
Wait, Mr. Gray. Lieutenant Hale, where is the elevator boy who identified Mrs. Gray?
In the next room, Mr. Keene. His name is Tom Emmett. Tom, this is Mr. Keene.
The famous investigator? Oh, it's swell to meet you.
Tom, do you positively identify Mrs. Gray as the murderess of Shirley Spears?
Well, not as the murderess, Mr. Keene. But I took her up to Miss Spears' apartment, and she must have killed her because she made a getaway down the service stairs.
Do you know this gentleman, Tom?
Oh, sure. He was Miss Spears' boyfriend. Pretty old for that kind of work, to my way of thinking. I don't know his name, though.
My name is Gilbert Gray.
Mrs. Gray's husband. What do you know? Always wondered why you kept your name in the dark.
Tell me, Tom, was Mr. Gray in the murdered girl's apartment today?
Not today, Mr. Keene.
Of course I wasn't.
I've got other things to tell you, Mr. Keene.
And I have other questions to ask you, Tom. Perhaps you'll excuse us, Mr. Gray.
Certainly.
Oh, boy. There's the door.
The door slam.
Mike likes those door slams. He likes to break on door slams.
I think you like door slams.
No, I actually
you don't.
Don't
like to slam
no,
that door.
No. All right, that's the first portion of Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, with a mother's plea murder case starring Philip Clark. And there's a picture of Philip Clark. Is it up yet, Lisa, at our Facebook page?
I'll have to check. Yeah. It might be.
We have a Facebook page for the show. We're going to put pictures up of Philip Clark, who plays Mr. Keene. Then we'll also have a really nice picture of Jim and Marion Jordan, the stars of Fibber McGee and Molly, and then Martha Scott and Frank Lovejoy in Suspense. So is Philip Clark up there already?
It sure is.
Just go to Facebook, search WGN Radio Theater. You'll see a picture of the actor playing Mr. Keene. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be right back. All right, it is 11:29. We're tuning in to Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. After that, Fibber, McGee, and Molly, and then Suspense. We have a website for this show as well, WGNRadioTheater.com. Our full schedule is up there all the way through October, Lisa. All of the Halloween shows are listed as well. I just today completed November and December schedule.
You've been a busy beaver, huh?
Busy, busy. Well, I have to send it to you for approval first, of
course.
Well,
that's for certain.
Yeah. And then...
I haven't seen it
and
yet.
And then it'll go off.
And then we'll change a few
bunch
things.
All throughout November, we have some great Thanksgiving shows. And then in December, bunch of Christmas programs.
We have people already clamoring for our Christmas shows. They're asking, and I said, we have to wait till December, but... You know, time goes by so quickly.
Yes, it does. It's only July, though. Just summer just started. Let's not shoo it away so quickly.
No,
I
July
love summer.
Is a good month.
Yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Lisa, how was your week?
It was great. Yeah? I didn't see you once this week, but that's not why it was great.
We only talked like one time this week.
Maybe twice or three times.
I don't think I sent you any emergency, like, call me emergency text this week.
You know
week.
What?
It was
a
pretty quiet
I was
week
at
for
shows
me.
Almost every night
Which
this
I know
week.
You want to talk about.
No,
we don't
no,
have
we'll
time now. We will a little bit.
But that way, I had a chance to see some of our other WGN family.
You saw three shows.
I did, and I saw Stephanie and Brian Noonan, and I saw Sarah.
Oh, the life of a millionaire's.
Right, you know, but I enjoy the show, so I love to be
there. Did you use all three of your chauffeurs, one for each of the shows?
Well, I have one drive me there and then one to drive me back.
Oh, okay.
That way they don't have to sit around and wait
for me.
Yeah,
we don't want that. Sit around. I don't think I had any emergency texts. Like, call me Lisa, emergency.
No, you haven't had a lot of drama lately.
Lately, it's been pretty smooth, just kind of smooth
sailing. This has got to be the calm before the storm.
Oh, please, don't say that.
Well, usually, you know, it's up and down, peaks and valleys.
So you had a good week?
I did. I had a great week.
Yeah? How's Simba doing? I know he's...
He's doing better.
Yeah? Simba hurt himself.
He got hurt a little bit. Nah. He was playing with his friend, who is a cat, and something...
The cat beat him up?
No, he sprained his hip.
Yeah.
I know they were wrestling around, but he's fine.
All right.
He's much better.
I'm rooting for him.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
We're listening to Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. This is called The Mother's Plea Murder Case. Let's get back to it right now.
Now that we're alone, Tom, you may talk freely. Now, what else have you to tell me?
I want to give you this $50 bill, Mr. Keene.
I see. Does it relate to the murder?
I don't know, but I got it from Miss Spears' sugar daddy.
You mean from Mr. Gray?
Sure. He gave it to me to say he wasn't near Miss Spears' flat today, if the police questioned me.
Was he there near the murder time, Tom?
He got there about an hour before his missus did. And I didn't take him down in the elevator either. Say, do you think maybe he did the shooting? Mrs. Gray looks like a pretty nice woman to me.
May I keep this bill, Tom? I'll give you a receipt for it.
Oh, I don't need any receipts from you, Mr. Keene.
I'll return it to you at the proper time. You'll testify to what you told me in court?
Yes, Mr. Keene. You can depend on me.
Then I shall see you later, Tom. Lieutenant Hale.
Yes, Mr. Keene?
Will you be kind enough to have this $50 bill fingerprinted?
Of course. But what's it all about?
In my opinion, it's positive evidence that Mrs. Gray did not murder Shirley Spears.
You don't change your mind often, Mr. Keene. And you turned her in.
I turned her in because I knew she wasn't guilty, Lieutenant Hale. And I promised to deliver the actual murderer to you within the week.
I'll release Mrs. Gray, then, on your word.
Good. And send her to my office, please.
Okay. But speaking of your office... Mike Clancy took a call from there saying Mrs. Gray's son, Jack, was there wanting to see you.
Mike and I will hurry down there now. Goodbye, and thanks, Lieutenant.
Mrs. Agnes Gray, the wife of a millionaire lumberman, has come to Mr. Keene begging him to save her from a murder charge. When her husband, Gilbert Gray, asked her for a divorce so that he could marry Shirley Spears, his young secretary, Mrs. Gray had gone to Shirley's apartment to plead with her. During their quarrel, Shirley was shot to death, but Mrs. Gray insists she was not the murderer. Mr. Keene has learned from the elevator boy, Tom Emmett, that Mr. Gray had given him a $50 bill as a bribe to conceal the fact that Gray was also at Shirley Spears' apartment near the time of the murder. Now Mr. Keene and Mike are returning to their office, where Mrs. Gray's young son, Jack, is waiting to see them. And Mike is saying...
Mr. Keene, sir, look through the glass. Seems Mrs. Gray beat us to the office. She's inside talking to a young lad.
No doubt it's her son, Jack. I'll open the door, Mike.
Oh, Mr. Keene, I knew you'd have me released from that jail.
Mrs. Gray, I assume this is your son, Jack?
Yes, Mr. Keene, the pride of my life. But it's the first time he's ever held back on telling his mother what he's up to. I can't get it out of him, what he's doing here.
Mother, I came to tell Mr. Keene that neither you nor Dad murdered Shirley Spears. I killed her, Mr. Keene. I'm the murderer.
No, Jack. Mr. Keene, Mr. Clancy, don't believe him.
And why did you kill a young fella? Because she was pulling your father away from your mother?
That's right, Mr. Clancy. And I expect to go scot-free. Her son's got plenty of justification for killing a woman who's breaking up his parents' home.
Mr. Keene, Jack is just saying he killed that girl to save me.
Calm yourself, Mrs. Gray. Go on, Jack.
Mr. Keene, it will hurt my mother to hear it, but... I was mixed up with Shirley Spears myself.
No, Jack, no.
It's true, Mother. What? I was there when you pleaded with her to give up Dad for our sake. And when I heard her laugh at you, I shot her. Arrest me, Mr. Keene.
No, arrest me, Mr. Keene. I deceived you. I killed her.
I'm convinced you didn't, Mrs. Gray. You're attempting to pay the penalty for what may be your son's crime.
That's just it, Mr. Keene. Mother sacrificed her whole life for Dad and her children.
Jack, how did you gain admittance to the murdered girl's apartment?
Why, I rang the bell and went in, that's all.
Did you walk up or take the elevator?
I took the elevator. Why?
Mike?
Yes, Mr. Keene, sir?
Please phone Tom Emmett, the elevator boy at the murder apartment. Tell him we're bringing up another suspect for him for possible identification.
Okay, boss. I'll use the phone in the back office.
I came to you for help, Mr. Keene. And you gave me your solemn promise.
So I did, Mrs. Gray.
The only help I ask of you now is to charge me with murder. I won't have my son pay for my crime.
What a wife and mother you are. Few like you in the world today.
Oh, Mr. Keene, sir. The elevator lad says that he'll be there another hour.
Thank you, Mike. We'll drive Jack out there.
Mr. Keene, I'm going back to the police station and confess to that girl's murder.
Mother! Mother! I'll bring her back, Mr. Keene.
Yeah, not so fast, me bucko. You're going with Mr. Keene and me to be identified.
I don't have to be identified, Mr. Clancy. I've already confessed. Isn't that enough, Mr. Keene?
The stronger the case against you, Jack, the better for your mother. If the elevator boy identifies you, I'm certain the police will pay no attention to your mother's confession. In other words, she'll be released.
And that's saying it all, Mr. Keene, sir.
Hello, Mr. Keene speaking.
Mr. Keene, this is Gilbert Gray.
Oh, yes, Mr. Gray. Are you speaking from your home?
Yes. My daughter Vera is very anxious to talk to you. She's in a high state of excitement.
Indeed?
Vera claims, and I believe her, that her fiancé murdered Shirley Spears.
Your daughter Vera's fiancé killed the woman you were involved with and wanted to divorce your wife to marry?
It does sound unreasonable, but it's a fact. The chap's name is Lionel Curtis, and he's here now.
What was his motive?
He had a prime motive, Mr. Keene. While he was ardently courting my daughter, he was actually using that as a blind.
As a blind? Why?
Because he knew my regrettable connection with Shirley and wanted to throw me off the track. He himself was infatuated with her. And when Shirley told him our plans, he murdered her.
While your wife was pleading with her to give you up, Mr. Gray?
Yes, Mr. Keene. My daughter saw him going in the apartment house where Shirley lived a matter of minutes before the murder.
Gray, your wife has already confessed the murder.
What?
But I think she did it to save you.
Does that mean you want me to confess to save her, Mr. Keene?
No. Your son Jack has confessed the crime.
I tell you, the murderer is my daughter Vera's fiancé, Lionel Curtis.
The case rests on identifications.
Whose, Mr. Keene?
I'll ask the police to escort you to the murder apartment with your daughter's fiancé.
And I refuse to go there, Keene. I'll spend $1 million to get my wife and son out of this mess, but I won't go to that place.
I think the police will persuade you, Mr. Gray. Goodbye.
Mr. Keene, sir, I heard it all on this extension. And if I ever listen to a cock and bull story, that's it.
You and Jack Gray go to the car, Mike, while I acquaint Lieutenant Hale with my plans. I'll join you in a moment.
Okay, boss. Come on, Jack.
Yes, Mr. Clancy.
Oh, Mr. Keene, there's that elevator boy, Tom Emmett, waiting at the door for us.
And so I notice, Mike. Tom?
Oh, hello, Mr. Keene.
Tom, look carefully at this young man and tell me, did you take him to the murdered girl's apartment in the elevator this morning?
That's funny, Mr. Keene. I did. Just before I took Mrs. Gray up.
Well, Jack, I confess I didn't believe you were on the murder scene.
I told you I was there, Mr. Keene.
Mr. Keene, is this the guy that bumped off Miss Spears?
It may be, Tom. But I'm expecting the police with other suspects for you to identify.
More, Mr. Keene?
Oh, will I be a big shot when it comes out in the papers I was working with you. Excuse me if I pop a button off my vest.
Oh, Mr. Keene, sir. It's Lieutenant Hale. And he's got Mr. Gray and his wife. And that young feller, I guess, with him is Lionel Curtis.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant Hale. It's always gratifying to work with you.
And with you, Mr. Keene. Although I'm not entirely in agreement that your client, Mrs. Gray, isn't our killer.
I confess to the murder, Mr. Keene, but I'm grateful to you for trying to save me.
Mrs. Gray, you confessed a murder you didn't commit to save your husband and your son, Jack.
That's what I've been telling Mr. Keene, Mother. When Dad told me that the police were holding you, I couldn't take it. I had to own up.
Oh, son.
Mr. Keene.
Yes, Mr. Gray?
Neither my wife nor my son, Jack, murdered Shirley Spears. Here's the killer, Lionel Curtis.
Mr. Keene, this old two-timer is lying his head off.
The question is, can you prove he is Lionel?
Well, I was 10 miles away from here when Shirley was shot.
Can you prove that?
Well, I don't know.
Tell Mehmet.
Yes, Mr. Keene?
Can you identify this man as going to the murdered girl's apartment shortly before she was killed?
I can and I do. Say, do you think he killed her? I'm getting all mixed up.
You've already identified Mrs. Gray as a visitor, Tom.
Yes, sir, but I don't think she done it.
And you gave evidence that Mr. Gray, her husband, gave you this $50 bill to say he wasn't in the murder apartment.
That's right, Mr. Keene. I wasn't taking no payoff to life to keep a guy from getting a murder rap.
Mr. Keene, I never gave this boy $50. I wasn't near Shirley's apartment today. I swear I wasn't.
Lieutenant Hale had your movements traced, Mr. Gray.
What?
And he discovered you were not. Is that correct, Lieutenant?
Mr. Gray wasn't here. Neither was his son, Jack, Mr. Keene. Only Mrs. Gray was.
I'll let you make the arrest, Lieutenant Hale.
Right. I arrest the person you told me you suspected, Mr. Keene. This elevator man, Tom Emmett.
You're talking through your hat, copper.
When you tried tricks on Mr. Keene, you put yourself in the electric chair, Emmett.
How'd you get me, Keene?
The police unearthed the fact that you, Tom, were the real lover of Shirley Spears.
I was until this old goat Gilbert Gray came along. Then she ditched me.
You, Tom, identified 3 people as being on the scene whom the police proved were not. And you gave me this $50 bill as coming from Mrs. Gray's husband. And that made me suspect you in the beginning.
Why?
It seemed unreasonable a man of Mr. Gray's intelligence would take a chance like that on an elevator boy. I had the bill fingerprinted by the police. Mr. Gray's prints were not on it, but yours were, Tom Emmett. It was all quite simple.
Mr. Keene, you saved me and my husband and my home. The good God in heaven will reward you.
Your gratitude is the most valued reward I can hope for, Mrs. Gray.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the Mother's Plea murder case. If you would like to know a quick, easy way to ease the pain of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, then by all means try Anacin. Your own dentist or physician may, at one time or another, have handed you an envelope containing Anacin tablets. Then you already know how incredibly fast and effectively Anacin brings relief. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients. For your own sake, try Anacin. Anacin is sold to you on this guarantee. If the first few tablets do not give you all the relief you want, as fast as you want it, you may return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. You can get Anacin tablets at any drug counter. Anacin comes in handy boxes of 12 and 30 tablets and economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100. Listen again next week to Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, a new weekly feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of Mystery, Comedy, Music, and Drama. Brought to you by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, and Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. And by Anison, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene. The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Dialogue by Frank Hummert, directed by Richard Leonard. Philip Clark plays Mr. Keene. Your announcer, Jack Costello. Remember, Mr. Keene is on the air at this same time every Thursday at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday when the kindly old Tracer turns to the Apple Orchard murder case.
Dragnet, Authentic Adventure is next on NBC.
All right, that's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Love that series. April 23rd, 1952, The Mother's Plea murder case. And that was sponsored by Dentine and Anison. And they're talking about neuritis and neuralgia. What the heck are those two things? I would not want to have either one of those.
I don't know what neuritis is. Neuralgia has to do with nerve pain.
Uh-huh.
Like tingling in your fingers and things like that.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's neuritis? Maybe it's uritis?
Is it tingling in your toes?
Neuritis is a general term for inflammation of a nerve or the general inflammation of the peripheral nervous system.
It's like neuralgia then. Those are similar.
Dr. Jennings.
They're both nerve related.
No, it's called Wikipedia.
Oh, I thought I was talking to Dr. Jennings. There from Rush Presbyterian.
Well, you could pretend
Hospital.
You're Dr.
Yeah.
Jennings.
No.
You're a doctor on radio.
Don't need to pretend. No, not a good idea. No.
You know what else? I don't know if you were listening to this, David, but they were talking about you can get Anison at any drug counter. Do you remember, Lisa, as a kid, I do, maybe you do, David, that they used to be able to go have lunch at the drugstore. You know, they would have literally like sort of a soda fountain there at the Rexall or one of your drug, and they would have sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that? And
they
I got an even better one. Not only Woolworths, I got a better one for you. Speaking of places to eat,
yeah.
Do you remember Horn and Hardart?
No, I don't. I don't remember that.
I guess it was primarily
can
an
you
East
say
Coast
that? Can
thing.
You say that again? What's
Horn
it
and Hardart.
Anyway, just felt like doing that right there.
He has a very stilted sense of humor. All know that.
I'm very childish. I don't know if you've picked up on this yet, David. Maybe you have. something like that makes me laugh. I don't know. But anyway, no, is that an East Coast restaurant?
It was a food services company, and they had what they call automats.
Oh.
You could walk in, and they would have sandwiches and hot food, and, you know, you just open a little window, take what you want out. And
yeah. I don't know that, but I remember growing up as a little kid and going into, with my mom or my sister or my brother, into a Rexall family drugstore, and there was the counter, and you could shop, and then you can have lunch. Maybe they had breakfast and dinner, too.
We had a place called Gazelle's in Highland Park.
Was it a drugstore?
It was a drugstore, and they delivered.
Really?
So you just, I don't know how that works.
Remember when doctors used to come to your house?
Right.
Yeah, like Marcus Welby.
MD.
Yeah, remember that?
Of course, they do home house calls.
Yeah, I would be like, okay, I'm home from school. My mom like, don't worry, the doctor will be here in a little bit.
Well, he would come home with his little doctor bag in his hand. Like everything he ever needed was in his black bag.
And as Peter Sellers said, not anymore. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Somebody texted in and said, you remember the stools that used to spin around at the counter? Yeah. I remember that.
That's the point. You spin around and your mom says, stop spinning on the stools. That's what every mom does.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you don't ever go into a drugstore and see anything like that anymore.
There's no more fountains.
There's no more soda fountains.
Yeah. And there aren't that many just pure drug stores anymore.
That's true.
Almost everything is part of a larger retail operation.
Straight to Costco. Very true.
I remember going into these drug stores and having lunch and say, it wasn't the Ritz, but I mean, it was a good, you know, bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich with some fries.
What's wrong with a good grilled cheese sandwich?
The guy behind the counter, he had like one of those little white hats on. You know, he's like, well, can I take your order? What would you like? You know, it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, Carl, maybe that's your next million-dollar idea.
There it is, David. Would you go in on this with me? Would you want to invest in this? It's drugstores that have counters that serve BLT sandwiches. Think we're making any kind of...
Yeah, if all you're going to serve is BLTs, probably not.
Well, you know, we'll have tomato soup and tomato soup is a really good combo sandwiches, some tomato soup, and maybe even peanut butter and jelly.
You'll probably make more money on the drugs than you do on the food.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a killer.
How about a black cow? Remember a black cow?
No, I don't remember. Was it like a milkshake?
Ice cream and root beer float.
Is that what that was?
You mean like a root beer float?
Yeah.
That's called a black cow?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Really?
No, I didn't know that.
Not everybody knew that.
No.
Did you know that, David?
A black cow was like a milkshake.
I vaguely remember the black cow.
Okay. I thought it was like a milkshake.
Vaguely having heard of it.
Folks, our listeners will know. What's a black cow?
I thought it was a root beer float.
I think it's a chocolate milkshake in a moo head, like a cow head.
I think you're right,
cup.
Carl. I think I'm wrong and you're right.
No.
Carl's probably wrong again.
Probably. Well,
we're having fun here at the WGN Radio Theater where we play all your favorite classic radio shows. The Shadow and Jack Benny and Gunsmoke, Dragnet, you name it, we have it here. Every Saturday and Sunday night, we're here two nights a week on the weekend, Saturday and Sundays, 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. A little later, right after the news, in fact, just in a few minutes, we'll have Fibber McGee and Molly going all the way back to 1942. Then after that, it's a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense from 1948. What's on the agenda tomorrow, Lisa? Oh, look at that.
We've got Jack Benny. We knew that was coming out. Jim loves Jack Benny.
Yes, he does.
We're going to dedicate that to him. We've got Jeff Regan.
Jeff Regan, private investigator.
And Weird Circle. We like to end things on a kind of a weird note.
We got some good shows for you tomorrow night as well. So make sure you're here with us all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning tonight, and then again tomorrow night.
I'll just mention really briefly that according to our texts, I believe I'm correct, and it's root beer and ice cream, as I mentioned. And somebody also mentioned that Laverne and Shirley used to drink that, which is true.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Laverne or Shirley or both?
They both did it.
Wow.
Did you not watch the show?
Yeah, I liked Laverne and Shirley.
I love Laverne
That was a
and
spinoff.
Shirley.
What show?
It was from Happy Days.
Yeah, way to go, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, David Jennings. And this is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater program, 197 in the series. And, of course, we have a podcast of the show. If you all of a sudden, like Lisa does, by about the second and third hour, you start... If you miss part of our show and you want to hear Suspense or the end of Fibber McGee and Molly, just check out our podcast because Shantae puts it together. She works very hard on it. It's available like less than an hour after we're off the air.
Yeah.
The podcast goes up. It's up in perpetuity. You can get all of our podcasts from
You're going to tell them where to find
ago.
The podcast?
Well, there's lots of ways you can find it. You can just Google.
Mention a couple?
Just Google it. WGN Radio Theater Podcast. It'll pop up.
Okay.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I've got the WGN Radio app on my phone.
And you can go to any show. Well, you're Lisa Wolf.
No, you can go to any WGN.
You're all about technology.
Yeah, that's me. You go to any WGN Radio show and hear any podcast you want. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, wow.
And we also post the podcast I do on our Facebook page on Monday. I will post the podcast from Saturday and Sunday.
Lots and lots of ways to get our podcasts. Hey, you know what? Got me thinking. We were talking about a black cow, and you are right, Lisa. It is root beer and vanilla ice cream. Did you say? You were right.
Oh, just checking.
You were absolutely right,
just
Lisa.
Checking on
you
that.
Were right.
Somebody mentioned there's an A&W in Madison, Illinois. It's Matteson. Do you know where that is?
Matteson. No.
Yeah.
Nope.
I don't know where that is. It sounds far away.
Yeah.
But it's probably fun.
But here's the thing. folks, remember growing up in the 60s? I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I remember drinking like Hulu and Green River and some of those types of things. Can you text us in some of the drinks that you used to drink as a kid that maybe are tough to find now? And we'll write them down. We'll name them a little later in the show. Our text in line is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Like the Black Cow or a Hulu or some of those other kind of things, we'd love to reminisce with you a little bit. We'll mention a bunch of them on the air a little later in the show, okay?
Okay.
Do you have some, Lisa, that you drank as a
kid? I've never heard of Hulu. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I remember drinking
Hulu. What is
it? It's like a chocolate drink. It was really good. I remember drinking it as a kid.
I watch Hulu, but I don't know.
No, it was like a drink.
You don't know what Hulu is, do you?
Hulu, yeah.
Yeah.
I do know what Hulu
okay.
is.
Okay. Maybe you
this
never
was spelled differently. I think this was H-O-O-L-U or something like that. Where Hulu is H-U-L-U, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I even got that.
Oh, you're up.
Wow.
Not bad.
Nice. Okay, so in this hour, we're going to tune in to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And then in our hour three, it's Suspense, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Old Man and the Gun, about a bank robber who escaped from San Quentin at age 70 and pulled off a string of heists.
Oh, yeah?
That sounds like a movie you might like.
I know, I would.
All right.
It's better than a romantic sing-along movie like La La Land. All right, so what do they win?
A lot of people obviously didn't
disagree with
you.
Yeah.
They are going to win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set, fully
All
dramatized.
Right. All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the Sundance Kid.
I can't swim!
All right, who is that? 312-981-7200. Tell us who that great actor is. And win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back. And you know what?
What?
I'm a Yoo-Hoo.
You are a Hulu.
I'm a Hulu Yoo-Hoo.
You're a hooligan.
It's actually Yoo-Hoo, our listeners.
Woo-Hoo.
What is it? No, it's
Yoo-Hoo. You.
It's Yoo-Hoo.
Now you got me confused.
And, what the heck is Woo-Hoo?
Woo-Hoo. Woo-Hoo.
Roger.
And Sluggo was the...
So Carl got Hulu instead of Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah.
And Roger thinks it's Woo-Hoo. So
no.
we are all a little confused
No, it's
here.
Yoo-Hoo.
No, I know. Yoo-Hoo. Remember, Yoo-Hoo was a chocolate drink.
Yeah.
It's Y-O-O-H-O-O, not Hulu.
Whatever it is, I had it wrong.
You
which
know,
is, you know,
Carl,
listen, at least I'm
were
consistent.
Were you wrong?
I'm consistent. I'm wrong every time.
He's right? got it now.
All
He's
right.
very self-deprecating. We have, we're playing Celebrity Scoop.
Yeah.
And we played a movie clip, and
Let's
we're going to play it one more time.
I can't swim!
That's all you get. We got Brian on the line. Hey, Brian.
I'm swimming in Yoo-Hoo. Right
Great.
Now. I'm in a Yoo-Hoo pool, Brian.
You're gonna be dreaming about Yoo-Hoo tonight. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for calling in. And I think you know who that fine actor is.
I believe it's Robert Redford.
Robert Redford is exactly right. Brian, you are a winner. You're going to get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It is fully dramatized. The leads are all Hollywood actors. The supporting cast is all local Chicago actors. The Twilight Zones are amazing. I have so many of them. I love listening to them over and over, and I hope that you appreciate them as well.
No doubt. I most definitely will.
Thanks,
Terrific.
Brian. Appreciate
Thank you.
You. All righty. Are you ready, Lisa, for Fibber, McGee, and Molly?
Yes.
All right. We're kind of like Fibber, McGee.
We are. You can.
But you know what?
What?
Fibber, McGee, and Molly, Jim and Marion Jordan,
I'll
they
be
were
Marion.
They were married in real life.
Right. That
we're
we are not.
Not. We're
Let's
not
just
married.
Be clear.
Lisa's married, but not to me.
Oh, they're listening to us outside.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Nice.
All right. Yeah, Lisa's married, just not to me.
Yeah.
So sorry, Lisa.
Sorry, Carl.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I just can't help you out here.
But, you know, you never know. There's other lives. You know, I believe in other...
How many?
In other lives.
How many lives
many,
do we have?
Many, many other lives. You
how
never
many?
Know. I don't know.
You don't know?
Let's... but you know what? Let's listen to Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Okay,
want to do that right now?
Let's say hi to the people
Let's
outside.
Go back to September 29th, 1942. They're coming back from vacation, and it's time for more of Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Here you go.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. As the poet said, home is the hunter, home from the hills. Only these hunters weren't hunting, they were fishing. And they weren't in the hills, they were sitting in a rowboat. Anyway, they're home. Yes, activity has returned to 79 Wistful Vista in the well-rounded forms of Fibber McGee and Molly.
Goodness, McGee, am I glad to be home.
Ah, me too. Well, you unpack while I take all the films down at the drugstore. I think these are going to be the best snapshots I ever took, Molly.
You ever took?
Yeah.
You made me take all of them.
Oh, Molly.
Now, listen, if there's a picture of me in that lot, it's because I was reflected in your wet bathing suit.
Well, gee whiz, Molly, you know I'm no good with a camera.
You're no good behind it, but, oh, brother, you're a regular glamour boy in front of it.
Am I really? You ain't just saying that because you admire me.
Say, look, sweet, I'm a busy woman. Now go away. Get out of my hair. What there is left of it after 13 weeks away from a beauty parlor.
Okay, I'll run along. Hey, did you take that last roll out of the camera?
No, I didn't have the camera. You were carrying it.
I was? Why, I laid it on that little shelf over the seat when... Oh, my gosh.
What?
I left the doggone camera on the train.
Oh, fine.
Oh.
You know, you're a lot of fun to travel with, dearie.
Yeah, but Molly, you know...
I never know what you're going to do next.
Oh.
And a good thing, too. If I knew, I'd never leave the house.
Yeah, but what am I going to do about the camera?
Well, what was the last picture you took?
It was the one you took of me making like I was a cowboy on that stuffed horse.
Well, in that case, I'd just leave the camera on the train. Maybe they'll never find out who it belongs to, I hope.
No, sir. I sold 27 subscriptions to Nasty Confessions to win that camera. And I'm going to get it back.
Well, forget it. Buy a new one.
I thought you says we ain't supposed to buy anything we don't really need. You said the government has asked us to try and...
All right. You win, dearie. Call the railroad and see if the camera's been turned in.
What was our berth number again?
Lower 8.
Lower 8.
And if everybody sleeps as badly in it as I did, there should be a lower 8.
Molly, that's a pun.
It may be a pun, but it was no joke. Which reminds me, I want to get to bed early tonight and see how that nightmare turned out.
Well, let me see now. I'll call the railroad, ask for the lost and found department, and tell them there's a camera on my seat.
Well, they'll probably tell you a better way to carry it is over your shoulder. But go ahead and call them.
Okay, hand me the phone.
Oh, heavenly days, we got company. And I'm ashamed to have anybody see this dusty house.
Oh, don't be so fussy. You've been using Johnson's wax so long, a speck of dust looks like a sandstorm. Come in.
Hello there, kids. Welcome home.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Hello, Mr. Oldtimer.
I'm afraid you got the advantage of me, bud. Who are you?
What you mean, Johnny? You remember me?
No, I don't think so. Your voice is familiar, but your face is strange.
Look, you're Fibber McGee, ain't you?
No.
What?
No. Everybody says that since my vacation, I'm simply a different person. I don't know who I am.
That's pretty good, girl. Yeah, that ain't the way I heard it.
Oh, my, here we go again.
Well, I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, says, why don't somebody get that feller Hitler? Don't worry, says t'other feller. Sooner or later, every house painter is bound to kick the bucket. Kick the bucket. Bucket. Have a nice vacation, kids.
You bet, you old timer. We had a little shack up on Lake Hatsapuchi.
How's it up there, kids? Kind of crowded?
Simply humming with mosquitoes. And what have you been doing this summer, Mr. Oldtimer?
Working in a defense plant, daughter.
Oh, how'd you get that job?
Well, sir, I answered an ad, Johnny.
Yeah?
Seems they wanted a man with vision. A man people could look up to and one that could still keep a down-to-earth attitude. And I got the job.
Doing what?
Testing parachutes. I'll drop in here someday and tell you about it. Well, glad you're home, kid. See you later.
Well, I hope he can keep the job. It's nice to know you'll always have a roof over your head.
Yeah, he's just a... Oh, hey, the camera. Give me the phone.
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. You mean the Atlantic and Frantic Railroad office in the Ipswich... Oh, is that you, Mert?
Oh.
How's every little thing, Mert? It is, huh? Yeah, nice vacation. What's that, Mert? Your brother from Montana? Working in a government garage, eh? Oh, geez. You still got that beautiful collie dog?
What's he doing in a government garage with a collie dog?
Jeep hurting.
Oh.
Oh, well. First show, we're trying. What's that, Mert? Okay, put him on. Hello, Atlantic and Frantic Railroad? Look, there was a camera on my seat, and... Yeah, I know it's better to carry it over your shoulder. That ain't it. Now, wait a minute. I left it on the train this morning when I got off.
Glad you left the camera on the train, McGee. I love railroad stations. Whenever I smell train smoke, I want to go someplace.
Yeah, me too. Someplace else. Hey, I wonder where the lost and found department is.
Well, we just want the lost department. We haven't found anything.
They just call it that because you go there when you've found you've lost something.
Oh.
I'll ask the guy at the information desk. Hey, bud. Hey, you. 4F.
Speaking to me, sir?
Yes, we are. Are you the information man?
Well, sir, it's a funny thing about that. Everybody asks, am I the information man? And I always say, well, if I'm not the information man, what am I doing here in the information booth? Though some people don't believe their eyes, ma'am, so they gotta ask questions like, am I the information man? Yes, ma'am, I am.
Well, look, Gabby. I left my camera on the train this morning, and I want to see if it's been turned in. Where's the lost and found department?
Well, sir, it's a funny thing about that. Everybody asking for the lost and found. So many people leaving things on trains. And my sister left a box of cheese sandwiches on the train once. Was doing a heat spell, so they found them all right. The second door down the hall.
Well, thank you. What time do they close?
Well, sir, it's a funny thing about that. I used to keep the lost and found department open 24 hours a day, but now with fewer people trying to locate lost articles, they only keep it open during business hours, regular business hours, which is okay, I guess. 5 o'clock.
You'd go around Robin Hood's barn for a shortcut, wouldn't you, bud? Well, much obliged.
Come on, McGee, second door down the hall.
I'm glad that's all we had to ask that guy. He just turns his voice on and leaves it running.
No, I suppose. Oh, McGee, look. Who's that over by the newsstand?
Well, as I live and breathe, but not very fast because it don't excite me much. If it ain't Abigail Uppington.
Ah, my dear Mrs. McGee, how nice to see you again. And Mr. McGee.
Hi, Uppy.
It's nice to see you again, Abigail. And what a clever little hat you're wearing.
Hat?
That's what she says, Uppy. Hat. H-A-T, hat. You know, that little cloth thing you wear on your head if your hair looks okay, and if you don't, you wear a turban?
Oh, but I don't understand. I am not wearing a hat.
Well, then what's that thing on your head?
Thing? Why, I don't believe that I... Oh! Oh, my goodness, how silly of me. It's the book of the month. I've been carrying a book on my head lately to improve my carriage.
That ain't a carriage, that's a truck.
McGee. Pay no attention to him, Abigail. I think it's very intelligent of you to keep trying to improve yourself, even at your age.
Thank you. But, tell me, did you have a pleasant summer?
Sure did, Uppy, and I really got tanned.
Really?
Yeah.
I always said you should be.
How about you, Abigail? Did you have a nice vacation?
Oh, I didn't go away this year, my dear. Though I did make a short tour with a little group selling war bonds. Every time someone would buy a bond, I permitted him to kiss me.
How'd you come out?
Mr. McGee, something must be done to stimulate people into buying more bonds. Really, I am quite discouraged. And that on top of the other horrible experience I had this summer.
Oh, what was that, Abigail?
Oh, It was that bachelor apartment building up the street from my house.
Yeah.
Those thoughtless, rude men spent day after day, week after week, sunning themselves on the roof, wearing only bathing trunks.
Oh.
I was shocked and horrified, really.
Gee. They still doing it, Uppy?
I don't know, Mr. McGee. I gave my binoculars to the Navy. So nice to see you.
Get your camera and let's get home. I have a lot of house cleaning to do.
Who said house cleaning?
Oh, that man's here, Molly. Hi, Harlow.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. It's nice to see you.
How are you, Molly? You're a sight for sore eyes. And look at old man McGee here. Why, you're looking swell, Pop.
Hey, don't pop me, you big hulk. You feel so young, why ain't you in school? You ducking the truant officer?
That's how I feel, all right, young. New lease on life. Had a wonderful summer.
Well, you really look at Mr. Wilcox. Where'd you go?
Didn't go anywhere. Didn't have to. Why do people go away? For relaxation, rest, sunshine, sport. Why, I had all those things right here.
Now, take it easy, Junior. You'll burn yourself out before you're 90.
Say, how'd you get all those things, rest, sport, and sunshine, without leaving town, Mr. Wilcox?
Just by working a little harder selling Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, Molly.
Subtle, ain't he, folks? Like a bull in ballet slippers.
Yes, sir. To me, there's no greater sport than battling dust and dirt and dampness with Johnson's Glow Coat. And it's so easy to apply. I get a good rest because it shines as it dries. And do I relax. Just to know that a kitchen linoleum can be so easily protected against dust and dirt calms my nerves and makes me so contented, I sleep like a log.
Oh, well, how about that sunshine?
Baby, you haven't seen sunshine till you've seen the smile on a housewife's face when she takes a look at that gleaming, sparkling, glow-coated linoleum. That's why I say...
Suppose, Harlow.
Eh?
Look, you're so full of pep. So full of health and everything. Can you put your hands flat on the floor without bending your knees?
Certainly.
And hold that position?
Why, sure. Watch. You mean, like this?
Come on, Molly, let's go. Hurry.
Look back, McGee. He's still doing it.
That's okay. I'll send the boy down Thursday morning to tell him he can straighten up.
I think it was kind of a dirty trick to run away from him like this.
He don't mind. He's in his favorite position, bending over looking at a floor. Hey, this must be the lost and found. Come on. Oh, hi, Bud. My name is McGee, and I left the camera on...
Ah, sure, a camera. Now, let's see, you'd be a 2A brownie type. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if this was a very camera because it has a torn place on the strap. Did yours?
Yes, and I...
That's fine. Take it along. No, you don't have to sign anything. You've identified it. Well, good day to you.
All right, that's the first portion of Fibber, McGee and Molly, September 29th, 1942. Fibber lost his camera while on vacation, Lisa.
It's happened to the best of us.
What would happen to you if you lost your camera? Oh, my gosh.
Well, these days, your camera is your phone, so it's a little bit different.
Right. Lisa's Lisa loves taking pictures, boy, I'll tell you.
I do.
Shantae could tell you that. Lisa loves to take pictures. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be right back. All right, when we come back from the news, before we get back into Fibber, McGee, and Molly, we're going to name some of the drinks that we as kids used to drink that are either no longer around or are tough to find.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That's us. Hey.
Hey.
Bill Curtis said we're Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf, so I believe him.
We had to pay him the big bucks for that.
Yes,
though.
We did. Man, I'm still trying to recover from how much money that cost.
Yeah, you're
me.
A big spender.
Oh yeah, you know it. Hey, I spent $29.99 and got me an Alexa or whatever that thing is called.
Did you get one?
No,
I didn't think so.
Aren't you getting me one for my birthday?
If you want
said,
it,
you said.
You know, that was during Prime Day. My husband bought two of them. I don't know why.
He bought two.
He's got
maybe
one. We've got one upstairs and one downstairs.
Maybe one's
I
for
kid
me.
You not. They were 30, but it was on Prime, Amazon Prime Day. I don't think it's 30 anymore.
No? Oh, I can't afford
it. I don't know
that.
If I can spend the extra
29...
10 bucks or not.
If it's over $29.99, I'm out.
That's what I figured.
Anything
I think it's
under
too
29...
technical for you. You have to hook it up to
oh,
things.
Oh, forget it. Forget
I don't
it.
Think you'd appreciate it.
All right,
it.
So we had a lot of texts. I wrote some of them
so
down here.
So many great ones.
So we were asking people to text in some of the drinks growing up in the 60s and 50s and 70s. And so here's a few of them. Tang. Remember that? Remember the astronauts drank it?
Drink, yeah.
Fizzies.
Yeah, they still sell fizzies.
Do they?
Yeah.
I got some at home.
Do you?
They have don't they have a Chipotle?
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
but I know they have
it.
It's made a comeback at some of these candy stores. They have packages. You can get them online. You can buy them online.
I think they have fizzy drinks at Chipotle.
Purple Passion Soda. Purple Passion Soda.
Never heard of
it. Strawberry Quick. I remember that.
Oh, sure.
And I think there was other
chocolate.
Yeah, there was other.
Yeah, I used to drink chocolate Quick.
KO. I remember KO. Mm-hmm. That was
good. Was the other chocolate drink.
Yeah, KO was like in a really sturdy can. You know, you couldn't crush the KO can. And then there was Graf's Cola, G-R-A-F, apostrophe S, Cola.
Right.
Wink. I don't remember
Some
that.
Some of these are before my time.
Of course, Ovaltine. I mean, people still drink that.
Still out there, right?
Bubble Up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Welch's Grape Soda.
That was mine.
I think that's kind of around still.
I don't know. That was my special
I used to drink Green Rivers as a kid.
Yeah, they still have that.
And then here's an interesting one. Hydrox Wild Cherry Soda.
Right. Ooh. Somebody texted in a
Hydrox.
Picture of the can.
And on the can it says, every drop pure.
Which is
what, pure sugar?
Pure,
I mean, what?
Pure soda.
Pure.
Pure
Pure put
something.
You in the hospital?
Pure something.
It was a soda. It was pure, though. I mean, yeah.
How about Hawaiian Punch? Do you remember that?
Yes.
How about a nice Hawaiian Punch, right?
Remember
that was good.
Remember the cartoon commercials? It was like the guy would punch the other guy?
Yeah, we did that already.
Yeah. All right, so thanks, gang.
How about Grape Knee-High?
Knee-high.
Loved
there,
knee-high.
There's plenty more. We just picked a few that
Our
we
listeners
appreciated.
Are the smartest listeners in all of radio. They really are. And they remember these. They may not remember all the classic radio shows. They probably remember some of the tail end of television, you know, the early television shows and things. But they know their drinks. They know when we mess up. Well, not Lisa. Lisa doesn't mess up very often. I mess up pretty much all the time. And when I do, boy, I'll tell you. Our listeners are right there, ready to correct me. And I appreciate that, because otherwise I would have been saying Hulu. I used to drink Hulu.
And here's me. I never heard of Hulu.
Yeah.
Here's Carl.
You don't remember Hulu. It was actually Yoo-hoo.
Yeah, you were so close. Again, just a few letters off.
I mean, you know, does that...
doesn't mean
if
anything.
It's only a few letters off.
Does
it's
not
like,
matter.
Like on Jeopardy, would they give that to me?
No.
No.
It's like, as Don Adams would say, missed it by that
much.
That's right. Just Chumley? So close.
Remember, he was the voice of Tennessee Tuxedo.
That's right.
Tennessee Tuxedo. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they're, G Tennessee. Remember that?
I do.
Those were great cartoons.
They were.
I used to love all those fractured fairy tale cartoons. Remember those, Raj?
Yep.
You know, with
that was in
Boris
prime time,
Badenoff and all those.
Right.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I love the little fairy with the would light with the wand. And that was always with a moral to the story.
And remember this one?
Aesop's Fables.
Yeah. Remember this one, Roger?
Right.
I'm going to clear my throat. You ready?
Uh-oh, it's right.
Hang on. Wow, make mincemeat out of that mouse. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
What was
that? Cat. That was the
Macintosh
cat.
Macintosh mouse or something like that?
Yeah.
I like that one. Lisa's looking at me like,
you know what it reminds me of? That Saturday Night Live skit where she says, good times.
Yeah, good times.
Good times.
Alec Baldwin.
Oh.
He's like, oh man.
Oh, he is so good on that show.
All right.
So.
You know what else is good?
Old-time
classic
radio.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
Or old-timey radio.
Let's go back to 1942. Here's the conclusion to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Well, now that's efficiency. And it's nice to know what type you are, dearie.
Yeah, ain't it, though? Now if somebody asks me where I stand in the draft, I can say I'm a brownie, 2A. Well, come on, let's grab a cab and go home.
No, sir, now. It costs us $1.25, and we can buy 5 war saving stamps for that. We'll take the streetcar.
Oh, but, Molly, it makes me sick to ride facing backwards.
Well, you can get a seat facing forward.
Oh, but I like to ride facing backwards so I can see who gets on.
Oh, for goodness sakes, make up your mind. Well, Mayor Latrivia, imagine meeting you.
Good day, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Latrivia.
Going away?
No, we just come down to the station to get my camera. Left it on the train this morning. Well, how's everything?
Splendid. Nice vacation.
Very nice, Mr. Mayor. And you?
Oh, yes, though I've been very busy, of course. War bond rallies, civilian defense organizations, salvage programs.
Say, I got a great slogan for you on that salvage stuff, Latrivia.
Oh, please, McGee, do you have to?
I'd like to hear it, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, it's a honey. Now, just imagine a big sign on the salvage truck that reads, "We want all kinds of scrap metal, so get the lead out."
So you had a nice vacation, did you, Mrs. McGee?
Just wonderful. You know, there's nothing as healthy as a fishing trip, and when it's McGee fishing, it's even healthy for the fish.
Well, perhaps I should take a fishing trip myself. A little incident in my office a short time ago made me quite angry.
Oh.
In fact, I'm highly incensed.
You are? Come here, let me smell.
He means he's furious about something.
Well, maybe he put on too much of that incense and somebody started wisecracking, huh?
McGee, I have not been using incense.
Well, what if he did? Who cares? I kind of go for a good smell and shave and lotion myself. Nothing sissy about that.
Why, of course not. Besides, the atmosphere in that city hall is so stuffy that a person almost has to...
I tell you, Mrs. McGee, I do not use perfume of any kind.
Who said you did? Incense ain't perfume. Incense is great stuff. Keeps the mosquitoes away, too. And they got some real nice fragrances, too. Sandalwood and roses and all stuff like that there. You got mosquitoes in the city hall, Chris?
No, we have not.
Well, then why the incense?
Because incense is the only... I don't use incense. I used the word in the sense of being angry.
What were you sorry for, Trivia?
The city treasurer accused me of being wasteful with public funds. And it's a downright political plot. I have been the most economical mayor this city has ever had.
Well, maybe he was referring to the incense. Yeah. Now, did you pay for that out of your own pocket?
Of course I did. No, I did not. There wasn't any incense.
Now. First you say there was, and then you say there wasn't. We don't care, Latrivia. You can talk plain to us. Shucks. Incense is a trivial item. I can get you all you want for four bits. What fragrance you like?
I don't like any. I hate incense. I don't want it around.
Well, I shouldn't think you would after that incident in your office.
Anyway, if it's just to chase mosquitoes, a little punk could do just as well.
That's fine. You've got the job. Be in my office in the morning. I never saw it.
The king's men sing, praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition.
Through the smoke and thunder of a mighty cannonade, the chaplain walked among his men, calm and unafraid. Shout, praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition, and we'll all stay free. Praise the Lord, and swing into position. Can't afford to sit around a wishing. Praise the Lord, we're all between perdition and the deep blue sea. They heard him through the rattle and the roaring of the battle, for a stalwart man was he. Shout and praise the Lord, we're on a mighty mission. All aboard, we're not a-going fishing. Praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition, and we'll all stay free. Down went the gunner, a bullet was his fate. Down went the gunner, and then the gunner's mate. Up jumped the sky pilot, gave the boys a look, then manned the gun himself as he lay aside the book. Shout and praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord, we're steady on position. Are we ready?
Hey!
Aim! Fire!
Praise the Lord, and pass the ammunition. Can't afford to sit around a wishing. Praise the Lord, we'll blast them to perdition.
If you're ready,
hey!
Aim! Fire!
The sky pilot said it. You've got to give him credit, for a son of a gun of a gunner was he. Shout and praise the Lord, we're on a mighty mission. All aboard, we're not a-going fishing. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, and we'll all
McGee riding home on the streetcar didn't hurt you any, did it?
No, I even kind of enjoyed it a little bit in spots. Hey, where'd you say the mother rolls of film were?
In the box with your fishing tackle upstairs in the hall.
Oh.
Say, wait a minute. I'll go get them for you, dear.
Oh, no, don't you get them. I'll get them. Oh, no. Oh, okay. there's a woman for you. Tired as she is, she still runs upstairs to get something for me. I'd never let her do it if I didn't know she was happy to do it. I'd do anything to make her happy. Why, she's the good... Now, who in the... Come in.
there, little girl. Well, I haven't seen you in a long time. What you been doing all summer?
Oh, gee, we've been awful busy, mister, me and Willie Toops.
Yeah?
We got real savage.
About what?
Hmm?
I says, what'd you get savage about?
Oh, about 2 tons, I betcha.
2 tons of what?
Savage.
Well, what made you savage?
Oh, we didn't make it. We just collected it. In Willie Toops' coastal wagon.
You collected... Hey, you by any chance mean salvage?
No.
Huh?
Hmm?
I says, by any chance, do you mean salvage?
No, not by any chance. We collected it on purpose. And gee, were they glad to get the radiator off my daddy's car. They said it was almost all copper.
Well, that was pretty generous of your old man, of your father to give him his car radiator.
Oh, he didn't know we took it.
Oh.
No, he had it off to get it fixed, and Willie and I didn't know what it was, only we knew it was metal, and the government needs metal, so we took it.
Well, I hate to ask, sis, but what happened when your father found out? When you dooted it, did you get a whipping?
Gee, you sound just like Red Skeleton, mister. Except that you haven't got red hair and dimples, and he's funnier.
Oh, he is, eh?
Hmm?
I says he is, eh?
Is what?
Red Skelton is funnier than I am.
I know it.
Now, look, sis, I'm busy. I got to take some films down to the drugstore. What do you want, anyway?
Well, I just want to ask you, mister, can I play in your sand pile? Can I, please, mister? Can I?
What do you mean, my sand pile? I haven't got any sand pile.
Oh, you have to. You're fooling me.
No, I haven't.
Yes. You got a dandy sand pile right back of the garage.
Right in back of the... Hey, that ain't a sand pile. That's my victory garden. Now you go away. Beat it. Scram.
Okay, mister, but you'll be sorry you treated me like this someday when I grow up and be a big movie actress and wear pretty bathing suits in the Sunday paper and marry Walter Pigeon. You'll be sorry.
Silly kid. Doesn't even know Walter Pigeon is already married to Mrs. Miniver.
Well, here's your film, dearie. And on your way back to the drugstore now.
Come in.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, Mr. McGee. Welcome home.
Oh, Mr. Wimple.
Hi, Wimple, old man. How are you feeling?
Oh, not bad, Mr. McGee. Except I'm a little sore up here.
Oh. Did you break your collarbone or something, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, no. I just went and got tattooed. See?
Oh, my gosh, a rabbit. What'd you get a rabbit tattooed on there for, Wimp?
I thought Sweetie Face would like it.
Oh.
She's often said she wished I had a little hair on my chest.
How is Sweetie Face, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, I guess she's all right, Mrs. McGee. Though she's mad at me right now, and I didn't mean it that way at all.
You didn't mean what way?
What I said at breakfast yesterday. The night before, she'd gone to bed with a sick headache, and when she came down to breakfast, I said, "How do you feel, horrible?" Meaning, of course, how do you feel, horrible? Was she ever angry?
Well, what'd she do?
Oh, she picked me up by one wrist and one ankle and whirled me around. Then everything went black.
You mean you were knocked out?
Oh, no. Sweetie Face had thrown me into the coal bin. Tell me, did you have a nice summer?
Sure did, Wimp. Say, you know, you ought to get away yourself for a while. It'll do you good.
Why don't you do that, Mr. Wimple? Take a few weeks in the woods.
Oh, I couldn't afford it, Mrs. McGee. I could have once, but not now.
You had dough at one time, Wimp?
Oh, yes, indeed. At one time, I had more folding money than I knew what to do with.
Oh, and what happened?
It folded. Well, I'm glad you're home again. I'd like to stay a while, but I promised Sweetie Face I'd come home and practice for the Army.
Practice what?
Maneuvers.
Oh.
Sweetie Face straps me in a baby carriage at the top of the stairs and gives it a push.
Wow.
She says if I ever get into the Army, she wants me to know how to drive a Jeep. But if I...
Poor
Poor little fella.
Well, he shouldn't ought to be so meek about everything. He's got all the sparkling personality of a torn sock.
Well, just the same, she'll drive him to desperation sometime.
Yep, he'll probably go fling himself under the wheels of a passing roller skate. Well, I'm off to the store, Molly. Hey, where's those films? Oh, here they are.
Did you take the roll out of the camera?
Gee, I didn't at that. Give me the camera.
I haven't got it. You had it.
I did? I wonder what it... Oh, my gosh.
What?
I left it on the streetcar.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Folks, I'm not an expert financier. I'm just a housewife. But I think I know when to turn the roast, if we have a roast. And when the Army needs the roast more than we do, we'll have macaroni.
I don't care for macaroni.
McGee, if it's going to help the government, you'll eat macaroni and like it.
With tomatoes?
Why not?
That's all right, then. On macaroni, tomatoes are good.
Now, where was I?
You were...
Oh, yes. Well, I just wanted to say to you other housewives and you men who sit in the living room and read the paper while we girls do the dishes, that if we put our minds to it, we can strangle a post-war depression with our own apron strings. We can avoid most of the mess we had after the last war by backing up our government right now. We've got to pay our bills and not buy anything we don't need. We've got to pay no more for things than the price Uncle Sam has set for those things. And ask our merchants to post those prices where we can see them.
Hey, incidentally, I just got a bill from the milkman.
I paid it. Now be quiet.
Okay.
And in order to help pay for this war and provide a cushion for ourselves after this war, there's no better investment than war bonds. Remember, V for victory, and if you know your alphabet, you know the only way to reach V is through you.
Good night.
Good night, all.
The characters of the old-timer and Wallace Wimple heard on this program were played by Bill Thompson. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That is Fibber, McGee, and Molly, September 29th, 1942, first show of the new season. And McGee's are back from vacation, but Fibber left his camera on the train. Jim and Mary and Jordan, we had Harlow Wilcox. Remember, we're going to have a whole movement about naming babies Harlow?
Yeah, not our baby, but not, a baby well. Should be named Harlow.
I'm not having any more babies.
I'm not having any more babies.
I've got three. That's quite enough for me.
Yes.
Isabel Randolph on there. Gail Gordon as Mayor LaTrivia on that program. Gail Gordon, of course, was Lucille Ball's foil for many, many years on The Lucy Show. He was Mr. Mooney, and that's Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Hope you enjoyed that. We had a couple more of these drinks come in. We had Frosty Root Beer and one of my all-time favorites. I forgot about this drink, Bosco.
Bosco, that chocolatey, yeah, chalky very thing.
Very chocolatey drink. And then also somebody texted in about some straws that were chocolate and also strawberry. And if you put the straw in the drink, it would melt after a while and turn your milk into strawberry.
Do you not remember that?
No.
I used to, yeah. They were not together. It was chocolate straws and they were strawberry straws.
Right.
And I, of course, had the chocolate. Yeah, it sort of put a chocolate flavor into your milk, and then you drink, and you drink out of it.
And then the straw, like the chocolate melted off the straw, and the straw was still there.
You eat the straw in the end.
You eat the straw?
Yeah.
I get it. It was
edible.
Chocolate
like
with a
chocolatey
hole
straw.
In the middle of it.
It was a real straw, but it was edible, and it sort of breathed a little bit of flavor into the
milk. I don't remember that. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa. What did you say, Kool-Aid? Yeah, that's people.
Yeah, but the fun of Kool-Aid when you're little is to rip open those little They came in those little
packets
and just eat it. You just lick it with your tongue.
No.
Lick-A-Maid.
Lick-A-Maid, but that was the true thing. You just take it and you just lick
what
the whole
heck
package.
Is Lick-A-Maid? What's that?
That's exactly what it is. It's a little powder stuff, and you just lick it.
Really?
Sometimes just pour it down your throat.
I used to do that too.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like bitter, like sour, like sweet and sour,
yeah,
a little bit at the same time, tart.
Yeah.
And it was delicious.
How about
that was a
you're
treat.
Speaking of drinks, Carl would know this, the wax bottles.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
With the little flavored liquids
the
inside.
I just had one of those recently.
You did?
I did. I was at a a Mount Prospect event, and one, it was kind of a, you know,
it was like
back
a wax,
to the past.
You bite the top
we
of it
bit
off.
We bit the top of it. It had like a cherry sweet drink.
Yeah, and
we
there's
were
never enough
them.
In it.
No, there was just a little tiny bit. Yeah. But the fun was to chew the wax afterwards.
Remember the wax lips? You just walk around with them?
Yeah.
I'll bring you some.
All right, I want
week.
Some. Yeah.
I want some, too.
We'll take pictures with our wax lips.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. It is 108. Thanks for staying up late with us, folks. This is Hour 3. It's program 197 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m., bringing you six classic radio shows every weekend. And in this hour, it's Suspense, starring Martha Scott and Frank Lovejoy in The Crisis. That's coming your way in just a moment. But first, it's time for Cat's Pride Celebrity Scoop.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film The Darkest Minds, about teens with superpowers who are taken from their families and placed inside internment camps.
And what do they win?
They are going to win a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
Nice. All right.
I know.
312-981-7200 is the number. Here's a hint. This actress is the star of This Is Us.
I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I can't wait to make Halloween costumes for you, which is weird because I'm not a big Halloween person.
All right. Who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I can't wait to make Halloween costumes for you, which is weird because I'm not a big Halloween person.
God, I'm so sappy.
You know what?
Very sappy.
I just have to mention that This Is Us is one of my favorite
oh my
shows.
Gosh.
We've got Laura on the line. Do you feel the same way, Laura?
It's so great.
It's so great,
Laura,
and she's one of my
should
favorites.
Should I watch it, Laura?
Yes.
I would like it?
I don't know. Sure.
Okay. I don't know. He's
if Laura says, then
not,
I will.
He's not that sensitive.
I will
but,
watch it. Laura said to watch
cry,
it.
Go for it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait for it to start up. Laura, who is that actress?
It's Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore is right. And I just saw her in 47 Meters Down, something like 40.
The shark movie?
Yeah, I saw her in that. I don't know. I wasn't like a huge fan of the movie, but I am a huge fan of This Is Us. So, Laura, you are a winner, and we are thrilled to give you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It's fully dramatized. It has Hollywood actors. It has local Chicago actors, and they are terrific. So I hope that you enjoy them.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
All right, it is time for Suspense. Probably the best mystery series of the golden age of radio, aired from 1942 all the way to 1962, and it was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills, and that's exactly what you got, suspenseful thrillers with the biggest names in Hollywood. And on this particular episode, from August 19th, 1948, we had Martha Scott and Frank Lovejoy starring in Crisis. Here's part one now of Suspense.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Miss Martha Scott in Anton Lieder's production of Crisis, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Mrs. Norquist? Mrs. Norquist?
It's the doctor, Mrs. Norquist.
What? Oh, coming. Oh, I'm sorry, doctor. I fell asleep.
I told you not to. I warned you. Oh,
I couldn't help it.
Let me see the baby.
How is he? Is he better?
Well, pneumonia's tricky. Temperature 106.
Oh, all day long it's been 106. If he'd only move, if he'd only cry. Oh, doctor, you've got to do something.
Mrs. Norquist, get hold of yourself. Fasten that sheet down. It's important that you don't let any of that steam escape.
All right, it's just that I'm so tired. When will the nurse be here?
There won't be a nurse.
Well, nurse, but you said there...
I've tried everywhere. It's the worst epidemic since 1918. The hospitals are full.
Oh, but I can't go on without a nurse. I can't.
Well, isn't there someone who can help you? Some neighbor?
There's no one.
Well, what about your husband? When's he due back?
2 or 3 days.
Maybe you'd better send for him.
You don't mean the baby.
Well, you can't keep this up. You need help.
Oh, I didn't want to worry Paul. This business trip's so important to him. Besides, I expected to get a nurse. Why, he doesn't even know the baby's sick.
You'll have to do it alone, then. How's the sulfur holding out?
I have enough.
Good. Now, don't neglect the steam for an instant. Keep up the warm alcohol sponge bath. Don't leave his side. I'll try to get back in the morning. And don't sleep. No matter how tired you get, no matter how you scream for it, you must not sleep. Here. Here, take these pills. They'll help you.
Thank you, doctor. Doctor, is little Kurt going to make it?
Well, that you'll know one way or the other before morning.
Oh?
Crack that temperature tonight, and he'll pull through. It's the crisis.
Poor baby. Little thin legs. Kick the covers, darling. Kick them. That's what legs are for. You don't want to give up now, Kurt. You're just beginning. You haven't seen half there is. You've never thrown a snowball or hit a home run or gone fishing with your dad. Oh, Kurt. Kurt, you should be in a hospital. Not in a homemade croup tent with a kettle of steam under your bed. In a hospital with nurses in white starched uniforms. Nurses who are awake. Whose hearts don't break when they look at you. I mustn't think about it. Steam. Kettle under the bed. Steam to breathe. Another kettle on the stove. Sponge baths every few minutes. Every few minutes. Temperature 106. Temperature 106. Temperature 106. How many times I took it, I don't know. Nothing in the room seemed real or tangible anymore. Nothing but the steam. Steam. I watched it, hypnotized. Now it was an eraser on a blackboard removing today's problems. Now it was a windshield wiper pushing aside the rain so I could see ahead of me. The vision slowly cleared. And then I saw it. A light. No, 6 lights. Bright flames. Birthday candles. 6 birthday candles on top of a white cake. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, little Kurt. Happy birthday to you.
6 years old. You're a big boy now, son.
I want my present.
Oh, mercenary little creature, isn't he, Paul?
Okay, Muggy, here it is. Here, son, let me help you.
Leave it alone.
What?
Don't you dare touch it.
Oh, now look here, Kurt.
Please, Paul, it's his birthday.
All right. Go ahead, unwrap it.
Well, Kurt, don't you like it?
No.
Oh, why, Kurt Norquist, how can you say such a thing after your daddy bought you a wonderful fire engine?
Why didn't you get me one with one seat?
But what's wrong with 2 seats?
When it's got two seats, you gotta let some other kid ride with you.
But don't you want to share your fun with your little friends?
I don't like nobody to have fun but me.
Kurt, you come back here.
Let him go, Paul.
Oh, but
he's
Mary.
He's just a little boy. He'll get over it.
Well, I hope so.
There were more birthdays, but as Kurt grew, a mounting fear began to grow in me, too. He looked like a choir boy, but there was something else hiding back of those innocent eyes. At 8, he forged his report card. At 10, he stole some things from the dime store. By the time he showed promise of being taller than his father, his personality, in spite of everything we tried to do, was really beginning to frighten us.
You wanted to see me, Father?
Yes, I did. Your mother and I are very concerned about you.
Again?
Why weren't you in school all week?
It bores me.
Well, where were you? What have you been doing?
Thinking. Just thinking.
What about, Kurt? What is it you think about? Is there something bothering you?
Yes.
Well, what is it, son?
School. I hate it.
But you like to read.
That's different. I read what I like. I don't like to be told what to do.
But don't you understand? Everybody has to be guided and told what to do.
Sure, I understand. But I don't have to like it. And I don't like it.
Kurt, I'm surprised at you.
Is that all, Father?
Yes, that's all.
I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to beat me.
Why, you insolent...
Paul, Kurt, please. There's someone at the door. What? Why, Mr. Johnson.
Kurt home?
Why, yes, he is.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, Fred. Now, what is it this time?
Are you going to tell them, Kurt, or do you want me to?
I don't mind. I stole a watch from Evans's jewelry store. A swell wristwatch.
A watch?
Oh, Kurt, we were going to buy you one for your birthday. You didn't have to steal it.
It was more fun stealing. Lots more fun.
This time, I'll have to take him to juvenile court, Mrs. Norcross.
Oh, no.
Fred, let me bring him down. You go on. I want to talk to him.
Paul's face was gray with hurt. His cheeks sagged and his eyes were bleak as he turned to Kurt.
I didn't want it this way, son, but maybe it's the only solution. Maybe it'll help straighten you out.
You're not going to put me in a reform school.
Kurt!
Paul was savage as he ran up the stairs after him. Kurt slammed the bedroom door in his face, and as Paul flung it open...
You've had this coming to you for a long time.
Oh, no, you don't. Keep away from me.
Kurt!
Wild lust was on Kurt's face, and a gun was in his hand, his father's revolver. I knew he'd do it even before it happened. Kurt! Paul went limp as he turned to me with a look of shocked surprise.
Mary!
Paul!
For suspense, Autolite is bringing you Miss Martha Scott in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Visions continued to rise out of the steam clouds. I found myself sitting beside Paul's bed. He was out of danger. Accidental shooting while cleaning a gun, that's what Paul told the doctor. I wanted to tell the truth, but I wouldn't hurt him any further. No, Kurt didn't go to the reform school. We hushed that up too. Lies, lies suffocating us. We shrank, Paul and I, crawled into our shells, confused, disillusioned, afraid of our only son. But Kurt grew, and so did his misdemeanors, until he was a handsome giant with the face of a Viking saint and no soul at all. The incident with Elaine McGregor proved that. I was transplanting geraniums on the other side of the hedge. I didn't mean to eavesdrop.
What's going to happen to us?
I wouldn't know.
Doesn't it make any difference to you?
Should it?
It's easy for you, isn't it?
What did you expect?
Nothing, really. You're in a class by yourself, Kurt.
You've got the heart of a tapeworm, but you're not going to eat into me.
Very pretty speech. I didn't know you were so voluble. But what does it mean?
It means I'm lucky. I can walk out of your life. You can't. You've got to live with yourself. You're rotten, Kurt. Rotten all the way through. You warp everything you touch. You destroy all the decent things around you.
Decent?
I despise you.
I thought you loved me. Madly.
You can't love a snake. You can only be charmed by it.
Goodbye, darling. Mother, you can come out from behind there.
Kurt, how could you?
Mother, I knew you were there all the time.
I didn't mean that. I mean the way you treated Elaine. Oh, Kurt, maybe marriage would be good for you.
Come, come, Mother. First you want me to get a job, any job. Now, you wouldn't want me to get married at my age, would you? I'm just a child.
No, Kurt, not you. You've never been a child.
This Kurt guy seems like he's a lot of trouble.
Really? You wouldn't know anything about that?
No, not at all. August 19th, 1948, The Crisis, starring Martha Scott on Suspense. Quick break, then we'll be right back. I'll tell you what, Dave gets the best guests, doesn't he?
He certainly does. He's got good connections.
Yeah. Fred Savage, I loved Wonder Years.
I love Wonder Years.
It's one of my
Years.
Favorite shows.
Me too.
Just thought that show was just...
We grew up
it was
with
genius.
Fred Savage.
Yeah, I love that show. You know who was the voice? It wasn't Fred Savage that did the voice. It was a grown-up version of Fred Savage on that show. And
no, I don't know.
I'm trying to think of the guy's name, but he was... Remember the movie City Slickers?
Yeah, of course.
There was obviously Billy Crystal.
Right.
And then there was... two other guys.
Yeah, one of them was the voice.
Help me out, Roger.
Roger. He's not there.
Is Roger there?
Not right now.
No, Roger's not
there.
We'll
look it up at the break.
I'm having a kind of a brain freeze. But anyway, one of the taller guys was the voice.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Lisa, you went to a couple of plays this week.
It was a big week for shows. There's three shows that I want to mention that I
Bruno
really...
Kirby was the other guy, but he wasn't the voice.
All right, we
so
can
Bruno
look it up at
Kirby
the
and Billy Crystal and the
and
other
guy
was the voice. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Sorry.
I'm sure somebody knows that. I just want to mention quickly three of the shows that I saw this week are worth mentioning. So I just want to get the word
all
out there.
All three of them are worth mentioning?
The three that I'm going to tell you about, that's why I'm going to mention them.
But those are the only three you saw this week.
Well, yeah, but sometimes I see shows that I choose not to mention.
Oh,
because
okay.
They're just not something that I want to say is great if it's not great.
Okay.
Okay, so I saw Something Rotten. Mm-hmm. It opened this week. It's a Broadway and Chicago show. It's at the Oriental Theater, which is on Randolph. It's a Tony Award-nominated comedy. It's going to be here in Chicago for a limited two-week engagement. It's running through July 23rd. I loved it. And you know who's in it?
Mm-hmm.
Adam Pascal, who plays Roger from Rent.
Yeah.
He played William Shakespeare.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. So he was in the Broadway cast, came here to do it in Chicago. You can check it out at BroadwayInChicago.com. I loved it. I brought my daughter with me. She loved it. Everybody loved that show. I just wanted to mention it's a great choice. I saw a show completely different than that called Here at Steppenwolf Theater. Very different. This is running through August 20th. It stars Frances Guinan and Amy Morton, who are both Steppenwolf Ensemble members, who are both extraordinarily talented.
They have appeared in
a lot of
Twilight Zones.
Well, you get the best of the best. I won't go into it. It's pronounced Here. It's spelled H-I-R. You can check it out at steppenwolf.org. It's a extremely dysfunctional family drama. And it's got a lot of twists and turns, and it was jaw-dropping, it was intriguing, it was unusual, it was confusing, it was a lot of things. And one more, My Son the Waiter, A Jewish Tragedy. It's with actor-comedian Brad Zimmerman. This was at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts, which is in Skokie, and you can check it out at mysonthewaiter.com, running through August 13th.
All right.
A lot of great stuff here.
Boy, I wish I had.
You know what
Chicago
she should do?
Chicago, you know, is a mecca for theater, right, Roger?
She should do Mr. First Nighter. She should be, it should be Mrs. First Nighter.
Mrs. First Nighter.
I know.
Right. She goes, she'll call
That's
me sometimes.
What I do.
She'll call me like, hey, what's going on? I'll be like, hi, what are you doing? I'm off to a show.
That's what I do. That's what
I'm
I love
off to a
do.
Show. And I'm like, really? You're off to a show?
Daniel Stern.
Yeah, Daniel Stern.
Thank you.
That's right.
To
thanks,
one of our
folks.
Listeners who texted.
Yeah,
in.
That was the voice of the grown-up Fred Savage on Wonder Years.
Yes, a bunch of people
and then
texted.
I'll
in.
Talk to her the next day, and I'll say, "Hey, what's up, Lisa?
Like, I'm heading, on my way downtown again.
Downtown for a show." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh!"
I am so lucky to have the opportunity to see all these wonderful shows in Chicago.
When are you taking me,
Roger? I see so many things that I don't even have people. I beg my kids. I'm like, "You're coming with me." She's like, "I
can come with you."
All right. I will. I don't.
I've never seen Hamilton.
Well, that
you're
is.
Not, and you're not
I,
going
I
to.
Should. I already saw that one. I get one invitation. Well, that one might be more difficult.
You know what? Come on down here. I'll show you a $10 bill.
I think
he might be on a $10. I think he's on a $10 bill.
There
I'm not
you
sure.
Go.
That's about as close as you're
Hamilton,
getting to seeing Hamilton.
A lot closer. I did see Hamilton, but we'll see something smaller.
Hang on okay. Hang a second. Hang on. Roger, let's try that again. I'll show you a $10 bill.
Thank you. There you go.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. And the actor that was the adult voice of Fred Savage was Daniel Stern. That's right. And we had a lot of our listeners text in about that. And also, he was with Joe Pesci. He was one of the robbers
right.
in the Home Alone movies.
Exactly.
With Joe Pesci. Yeah, that's.
And he was also in the. With Billy Crystal.
Yeah, City Slickers.
Yeah. City Slickers.
Yeah, we said that. You missed that part.
Yeah, I missed that part. I was working in the other room.
Yeah, sure
well,
you were.
Sure, you're working away up there.
All right, we're listening to Suspense. Let's get back to The Crisis starring Martha Scott.
Everything he did seemed to be aimed at hurting someone, and always it pleased him. And then one day, as suddenly as you turn over a page, Kurt was different. He slammed the front door and he was whistling. He was gayer than I'd ever seen him.
Hi.
Well, what are you so gay about?
The proverbial leaf has been turned, and you see before you a hard-working young man.
Kurt, you've got a job.
That's right, Mother. A job.
Oh, at the lumberyard? Oh,
don't be silly. I'm a banker.
A banker? What bank?
First National. Mr. Cox was very nice about the whole thing.
Your father's bank? Then Paul got you the job.
You talk like the old man owns the place. He's just a teller.
Then how did you get the job?
I talked to Mr. Cox.
Kurt, what did you tell Mr. Cox?
You should have been there, Mother. I melted the old boy's heart. He swallowed the whole thing.
Swallowed what? What did you tell Mr. Cox?
Don't get melodramatic, Mother. I merely told him that I had to go to work because we needed the money. That I liked the idea of working in a bank. You know... Like father, like son?
Oh, needed the money. Oh, Kurt, you didn't. You didn't humiliate your father that way.
But you wanted me to get a job.
Kurt, ever since you've been old enough to think, you've been bad. You caused your father nothing but heartache. You're aging him, draining all the joy out of his life. And now this crowning humiliation. But I'm warning you, Kurt. If you cause your father any more sorrow, if you hurt him just once more, I'll...
Kill me? Bravo, Mother. Now let's have the second act.
You fiend. It was the first time I ever slapped him. But I knew then there would never be any peace for us. That he would go on and on until there was nothing left. No honor, no decency, nothing. But even I didn't suspect the depth of his malignancy until it was too late. Paul was coming up the walk alone. His step was slow, his back was stooped, and his face was lined and tortured. I opened the door for him. Paul, what's wrong?
I've been fired.
Fired? After 22 years?
There was a shortage this morning. $1,000.
Oh, surely they don't think you took it. You've handled millions of dollars down there and never touched a penny of it. How could... Kurt took it, didn't he?
Yes.
And you took the blame?
Not exactly. He's very clever, Mary. He's devilishly clever. He worked hard. He did his work well. I thought... I tried to kid myself anyway that he was outgrowing his badness. It was all part of a warped scheme. He won the respect of everyone in the bank, and Mary simply stole the money and planted the evidence that led straight to me.
Why didn't you tell Mr. Cox what we've been through, what a bad boy he is? There are records at Juvenile Hall. We could prove it.
You know what Mr. Cox said to me? He said he wouldn't prosecute because of my wonderful son. My wonderful son. I never had a son. I couldn't look at him, Mary. When I walked out of the bank, Garvey and Cage One didn't even say goodbye or good luck or too bad or anything. Just got suddenly too busy to look up. Forgot all about the months we lay in the mud together at Taro and the Navy Crosses. We went on the same day. Garvey was too busy to look up. I couldn't tell him the truth. I'm not strong like you, Mary. I can't take it anymore.
He was looking at me, but he didn't see me. His eyes were covered with a film of tears. Then he turned and staggered out of the house. He walked like he was drunk. Yes, that's what he was, drunk with despair. He got in the car. I wanted to go to him, to hold him in my arms, but I couldn't. I was frozen. The car lurched away from the curb, skidded around the corner. It was like a madman driving. I wasn't surprised when they called me from the hospital. Reckless driving, they said, accidental death. But I called it something else. I called it murder. At that moment, I died too. Oh, I went through the motions of living at the cemetery and after. I kept on, not counting the days coming or going, and one day I realized Kurt was 25, a man, a handsome, ruthless man. We lived in the same house, but we had nothing to do with each other. Until one November afternoon, I was in the kitchen making an apple pie. It had always been Paul's favorite. Suddenly, the room was throbbing with Paul's presence. Paul! I dropped the knife on the floor and ran up the stairs into my bedroom, mine and Paul's. I was wild out of my mind. I turned about the room, everywhere searching. I needed him terribly. I could feel his presence, and yet it wasn't enough. It had to be something tangible, something I could touch. And then I remembered the Navy Cross and the Purple Heart. They were his. They were part of him. I pulled out the shirt drawer and threw his shirts on the bed. The Purple Heart was there in its satin line box, but the Navy Cross was gone. Oh, Paul. 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 Oh. The room was dark. I lay there for quite a while. I had no reason to get up. Kurt was home. I tidied the bed, spread it up, ran a comb through my hair. I walked along the hallway to his room.
Yes? You want something? I'm in a hurry.
Yes, I do want something. Your father's Navy Cross, where is it?
Oh, that. I was holding three aces when I ran into a straight. Jack Carnes said he'd take the cross in lieu of $5. How do you like a guy like that?
I looked at Kurt for a long time. Then I walked away. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. Not that day or any other day. Not even later when the policeman came to the door.
I have a warrant for the arrest of Kurt Norquist.
On what charge?
Murder.
It was a colorful trial. Murder in the first degree. The front pages were blushed with it. Little shop girls hurried to buy the evening editions of the sordid testimony to read on their way home from work. I went to the trial every day and listened with this strange sense of unreality.
Sure, I killed him.
All I could think was, that flashing, handsome young man up there admitting to murder and worse is my son.
No, I didn't hate him. I didn't even know him very well.
Then why don't I feel anything?
I just wanted to see what it was like. That's all.
Why don't I shudder with disgrace? Why don't I crawl off into a corner and die?
Sorry? What for? He's dead, isn't he?
The trial went on for days, and Kurt was unmoved, insolent, triumphant almost. Even as his wretched soul made ready for the lethal chamber, he was untouched.
In there, madam. 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Well, hello, Mother.
Mother? Oh, yes, I am your mother.
Huh? Oh, you brought me some cigarettes. Thanks. Well, I wonder what it's going to be like.
What?
You know, that last mile. I'm a queer guy, all right. I don't feel sorry about anything. As a matter of fact, I don't feel anything at all. Never did. Except that maybe this is a good smoke.
I look deeply into his face, beyond the pale blue eyes, into the black soul. I gave him life, but I couldn't give him honor. He exhaled. Smoke came out of his mouth and nose and spun around him, enveloping his face, framing it in a circle of fog. Then he smiled. Not the smile of a murderer, more the slow, wistful smile of a small boy. And abruptly his face was changed. I've been here before. I watched the smoke rings as they billowed upward. I couldn't take my eyes off them. And each smoke ring was a face. Kurt's face. And the faces kept changing, getting smaller and smaller. The eyes were round, full of wonder, changing. And slowly the vision faded. They all converged into one face. And Kurt was a baby again. In a croup tent. Fighting for the right to live a useless life. I've seen ahead. That's what it was. I know what's in store for him, and it's all bad. Steam? Not much left. In a moment, there won't be any. Oh, let him go. He'll turn out bad. No good, not worth my tears. It won't be wrong. Let him go. Steam. It's gone. I won't get the kettle. It isn't wrong. Let him go. No. Oh, no, little Kurt, wait. Don't go. Oh. Steam, kettle. Don't take him, oh, please don't take him. He's just a little baby. He doesn't know. Steam, I must take his temperature. Oh, I'm afraid. Crisis. Temperature, 106. 6 tenths. 107. Oh, no, no. He's gone. He's gone. He's dead. As I held the thermometer to the light, I brushed them off. And then I looked. The mercury stood at 106. 105. 103. You're going to get well, Kurt. Temperature 101. And grow strong and handsome. Temperature 100. And good, Kurt. You're going to be good. Please, God.
thank you, Martha Scott, for a splendid performance. Miss Scott will be back in just a moment.
Billy, would you mind getting me a glass of water, dear?
You ought to install a stay-full battery,
why,
Mom.
Billy.
Sure. Then you'd only need to take a drink 3 times a year.
Oh, you men. Can't you talk about anything but that Autolite battery?
Now, look, honey, if you wanted to go downtown tomorrow morning and the car wouldn't start, you'd be pretty mad, wouldn't you?
Why, of course I'd be mad.
Sure, so would anybody. That's one reason why we have a stay-full battery in our car. And listen to this.
Yes, friends, Autolite stay-full batteries are designed to save you trouble and care by practically eliminating one of the major causes of battery failure, lack of water. You see, Autolite stay-full batteries need water only 3 times a year in normal car use. And remember, when it comes to automotive electrical parts, Autolite means batteries.
Stay full batteries.
Autolite means spark plugs.
Ignition engineered spark plugs.
Autolite means ignition systems.
The lifeline of your car.
And now here again is Miss Martha Scott.
It's been a real pleasure to appear on Suspense tonight. You know, I never miss hearing the program whenever possible, and I'm going to make a special effort to be at my radio next Thursday night when Van Heflin stars in a story called Song of the Heart, a gripping study in
Suspense.
Miss Martha Scott is currently appearing in the RKO production So Well Remembered. Tonight's Suspense play was written by Gwen and John Bagney with music composed by Lucian Marowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Van Heflin in Song of the Heart.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Drive carefully. Save a life. It may be your own. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Lisa wants to be the Autolite spark plug girl.
I do. Yeah. I think that would have been my job had I been around at that time.
Say it. Do it. Switch to Autolite.
Good night.
Good night. Try, do the whole thing.
I don't remember it.
Switch to Autolite.
Well, I can't do it now. I'm not going to.
Why?
Because I don't.
That's the words. Switch to Autolite.
No,
good night.
I know.
No.
Can't do it now.
Come on. You're supposed to be able to just. Actors like can do it. Just snap their fingers and go.
Yeah.
Anyway. Unique. That was Suspense with the Crisis. Martha Scott, also in the cast, Frank Lovejoy. August 19th, 1948. Great story. Paul Frees doing the announcing there. Sponsored by Autolite, as heard on CBS.